From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
Jenny Macklin, former senior Labor minister and one-time deputy leader of the ALP, is retiring at this election after more than two decades in Parliament. Unlike many politicians, Macklin has a deep background in policy, steeped in areas including social security and health. In the Labor government, she served throughout as Minister for Families, Housing, Community Services and Indigenous Affairs. Disability was added later. She was instrumental in formulating Labor's parental leave policy and the landmark National Disability Insurance Scheme. Early on, she'd worked closely with Kevin Rudd on his national apology to the Stolen Generations. Jenny Macklin joins us today to talk about policy and the time ahead. Jenny Macklin, do you have any regrets about leaving just when Labor has a very strong prospect of being back in office in a couple of months?
No, I don't, Michelle. I think my time has come to move on. 23 years is a long time to be in the Parliament, and it really is time for me.
You've always been a bit of a policy wonk, but in the age of the 24-hour media cycle, of Twitter, of infotainment, is policy development becoming ever harder? Are politicians even less likely or able to look to the long term?
I don't think so, and I think the increase in inequality in our country and in similar countries around the world really demands that our senior political leaders take the issue of strong policy development, particularly to reduce inequality, seriously. There are significant policy changes that we can make to reduce inequality, and it's our responsibility to do that.
Your responsibility as a political class, but is it just more difficult to address that responsibility?
No, I don't think so. If you take the development of the National Disability Insurance Scheme, which certainly was the biggest reform that I was responsible for, it did take a long time, 5 years, in fact, from start to finish. But it is possible, I think, to achieve these big reforms. One of the advantages I had was that I held on to the same portfolio all of that time. And I would say that stability in government is really necessary if you are going to deliver big reforms.
Well, indeed, you held on to it during three administrations within Labor's relatively short term in government, which was pretty amazing. But just taking up the NDIS, several years on, it does seem to have a number of problems, including lags in people getting access to the scheme and children getting timely support under it. Does the scheme require any structural changes, or is it a matter of poor implementation? And what would an ALP government do about this?
One of the worst decisions that this government has made that has badly affected the National Disability Insurance Scheme and led to the problems that you've rightly outlined is that they early on put a cap on the number of staff who could be employed in the National Disability Insurance Agency. And of course, that has meant that people are waiting too long to get into the scheme. They're waiting too long to get their plans done. You're right to say that children are waiting too long to get the early intervention that they desperately need because the assessments aren't done quickly enough. I think this problem is able to be fixed by the removal of the cap, and I'm very pleased that Labor has already announced that they would get rid of that staffing cap to make sure that we have enough people employed to actually do the job that people desperately want them to do.
So you think it's a matter of staffing? There are not structural problems with the scheme?
That's right. I think there are other issues as well. You would have heard, I think it's just today, that a number of providers have come out, providers of disability services are saying that there's problems with the pricing of services. I think that's true. Once again, there just hasn't been the quick response that has been needed. But I don't think that it goes to the fundamentals of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. This is a huge cultural change, and I'm certainly aware of thousands of people whose lives have already been improved as a result of the changes to the scheme.
Now, you've already given your valedictory speech in Parliament, and inequality was a key issue that you highlighted.
Yes.
Last week marked the 25th anniversary of Newstart not being raised. Labor's committed to a review of the rate if it wins government, but what has held it back for so long from addressing this injustice?
Well, it certainly does need to be addressed. Can I say that first and foremost? It's been my view for a long time now that Newstart is too low. It's been the policy that I've been responsible for to have a proper review, which is exactly what we did with the changes to the pension that we made when I was the responsible minister. So it is time that we do this proper inquiry, that we go through the inadequacy of Newstart, and I would hope that if Labor is successful at the coming election that this decision will be made quickly to do the review, and we can hope for a good result.
The Fair Go is a key battleground in the coming election, but the emphasis is much more, I think, on wages than welfare. Apart from boosting Newstart, do we need to review the whole social security system more generally?
I think that we've talked about Newstart, and that definitely does need a proper review. We also do need to look at the wages system, because there are around a million Australians who are what we call underemployed, who really want more work than they're able to get, who are living on very, very low wages. So I think it is a good thing that we're seeing the focus come onto wages, and particularly onto the working conditions of people who are really struggling in the labour market. That said, there are other social security issues. One of the tough issues, I think, is that we've got concentrations of very disadvantaged people in different parts of our otherwise very wealthy country. And these are areas with high unemployment, very high youth unemployment. And that requires us to think across the board about all the different supports that people need in these communities, starting with making sure that the littlest children get very good early childhood education, that they get much better support at school, which is why our needs-based school policy is so important. It's why our policy on three-year-old kindergarten is fantastic. I think these policies are critical, but we do also need to put a lot of effort into supporting especially young people in these areas of concentrated disadvantage.
So you're saying there are virtual ghettos of disadvantage?
Well, I wouldn't use that word, but there are places where people are facing very, very tough lives. Many of them find it very hard to afford housing, so I think that too is another area where we need much better policy than we've seen, certainly over the last 5 years. And I do think that Labor's commitment to introduce a more affordable housing scheme, which we had in government, this government's got rid of, so making sure that we address affordable housing is another area that will really help people in these areas of concentrated disadvantage.
Just on a couple of specific measures, there's a lot of controversy surrounding the Parents Next scheme, which is designed to assist young parents on income support to become employment ready. and also, of course, the robo-debt system. What would a Labor government do about these two?
Well, I think both of those really demonstrate that we shouldn't, in the case of robo-debt, rely on computers to basically tell us how to work with people who are in very difficult circumstances. I've seen the horror firsthand of Centrelink getting these decisions wrong. Seen it in my own electorate, and I think the same with Parents Next, that it's critical that we work closely with parents, work closely with people who are relying on Social Security to support them as they raise their children, as they're looking for work, rather than rely on some computer-generated instruction that unfortunately in both these cases seems to often get it wrong.
More than one in eight people live below the poverty line in Australia if you apply the measure that's used in most international poverty research. And the poverty rate among children is even higher. After 28 years of economic growth, why do we have such persistent poverty, and particularly poverty entrenched, as you've been speaking about, in particular locations? And what new approaches can we take to just get a breakthrough here, or is there no broad thing that you can do?
I think there are answers, and it does require concentrated effort. I would always say that we should start with the littlest of children to make sure that we give them the best start, and so providing early education and continuing throughout their schooling lives by making sure that the schools are properly resourced to give them the extra support they need at school is one very important change that, and certainly this is an area that Labor is determined to change. We do have to make sure that housing is affordable. We have to make sure that the employment services are really targeted to those who are finding it very hard to get into the labour market, who need extra support to get the jobs that may be available in their area or not too far from where they live. So if we focus in hard on early education, needs-based schooling, affordable housing, making sure that we provide concentrated support for people who are finding it hard to get a job, these are some of the very practical things that can be done, but it does require concentrated effort, and I'm pleased that in each of those areas, Labor certainly is determined to make those changes.
I wonder if we're in danger of actually worsening poverty for the future, especially among older women, by not arresting the decline we've seen in home ownership. Do you think this is a problem, this decline?
I do, and I agree with you about the issues facing older women. There's certainly evidence that shows increasing numbers of older women finding themselves in dire poverty because of their housing circumstances. It's actually one of the reasons that we changed the structure of the age pension as a result of our pension review to give a higher benefit to people who are single. Pensioners who are single because of the increased costs that they face. But that's why we do need to get serious about affordable housing. And I know that Doug Cameron, in the work that he's been doing to really find new answers for the National Rental Affordability Scheme, that this group of people, older women, have been at the front of his mind in his consideration. It is a serious issue. It's also, of course, one of the reasons why we need to address negative gearing. We shouldn't be making it easier for people to buy their seventh or eighth home rather than those who are trying to buy their first home.
Just switching topics to Indigenous affairs, in another point in your speech recently, you said that we shouldn't go back to the false dichotomy between practical and symbolic change in Indigenous affairs. What do you think is lacking in policies addressing issues in this area at the moment?
Well, I'm really, in that comment, referring back to a very pointless argument that John Howard perpetually ran against the apology to the stolen generations. His argument was that this wouldn't help anybody get a job or raise their children. And I think it failed to understand that how you feel about yourself, the pride you have in yourself, the pride you have in your culture is very important, as important as making sure that your children are able to get a good education. And I would say the same, and I said this in my last speech, that we should be making sure that we implement the recommendations from the Uluru Statement, that we do everything that we can to make sure that we have a successful referendum to establish a voice to the Parliament in our constitution, so that people, Indigenous people, are in fact able to make sure that they have a stronger say in the running of this country. At the same time, we need to increase our efforts to close the gap, and in doing that, listen much more and have Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples really directing how the programs that lead to fixing this a gap in life expectancy between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. That's only going to be closed if Aboriginal people themselves actually guide the policies and programs that are needed right throughout the country.
Way back when, Labor voted with the Coalition to support the intervention in the Northern Territory. You initially opposed the policy, but once in government, you oversaw the implementation of measures. That policy has been much criticised and on a number of fronts just seems to have failed. What are your thoughts about it in retrospect?
Well, one of the very bad things that was done as a result, or as part of the Northern Territory emergency response, was that the Howard government suspended the operation of the Racial Discrimination Act. We didn't support that, but you might recall this was at a time when the government, Mr Howard's government, actually had the numbers in the House as well as the Senate, and they actually pushed that legislation through in a very, very short period of time. As soon as I was able, once I was the minister, I reinstated the operation of the Racial Discrimination Act. We paid rent to the traditional owners for the land that had been taken for the purposes of the emergency response. So we did actually put in place some very important changes to address some of the very serious errors that I think the Howard government instituted. That said, there were significant investments that were made in health services. We dramatically increased the funding available for remote Indigenous housing, and that has meant that thousands of new homes have been built, more have been refurbished. But of course, the job is nowhere near done. If there's an area that needs attention right now, it's making sure that the money that's been promised, for example, in the Northern Territory, that it's actually put in place so that those houses can be built and built urgently for people, Aboriginal people in the Northern Territory.
Been a lot of talk recently about women in politics. You were the first woman to become a deputy leader of a major party. Can you just reflect for us a little on your experiences as a senior woman in politics?
Well, one of the good things, I think, is that we've now seen a number of women taking senior positions. So Tanya Plibersek is now the third Labor woman to be a deputy leader. Julie Bishop, of course, was the deputy leader for a long time. So I think seeing, and of course Julia Gillard was Prime Minister, I think having a number of women now taking leadership positions makes it not so unusual, and that's a good thing. When I first came into the House of Representatives, there was only four women on our side, on the Labor side. We had had a shocking election defeat, so we didn't have very many members, but equally we had very, very few women. One of the biggest changes has been to see the very large increase in the number of women on the Labor side, and the fact that we hope to get to 50% female representation at the coming election, I think is an absolute credit to the decision that was made back in the early 90s and then reinforced by a later decision to introduce a quota system. I think that has been absolutely essential to bringing about the change on the Labor side of politics for women's representation.
I think we've forgotten those days when Labor had the women's problem.
Well, we had very, very few women in the Parliament at that time, and you would recall when Susan Ryan was in the Cabinet in a very lonely position. So it was it's changed dramatically in those 30 or 40 years, and all for the better.
There's a lot of reflections on the fact that it's a bear pit in federal politics. What would be your advice to aspiring women candidates?
I actually find that there's lots of women, I'm glad to say, who are keen to come into political life. Lots of young women I meet who ask me what should they do, and the advice I always give them is to get involved, to first of all get involved in the issues that really motivate them, that they feel strongly about, whether it might be the environment, it might be a whole range of different local issues that people get part of, and that way that they'll test out their own interests but also learn the ropes. Yes, it is a robust environment, and it's necessarily so. We have very different views about what needs to be done for the country. One of the things that unfortunately hasn't changed much in my 23 years has been the huge fights I've had to have against very substantial Liberal cuts to Social Security, both in the early days of the Howard government and then, of course, with the horror budget of 2014 by Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey. And it really continues to bring home to me why, from the Labor point of view, we need people who are really willing to stand up for those who are most in need in our community. There is a very different view between the two major political parties about the importance of having a strong safety net. Any one of us can find ourselves with a terrible disability or find ourselves out of a job, need the age pension, and I don't think anyone who's in that situation should be insulted, as Joe Hockey did, by talking about the age of entitlement. My view is that each and every Australian who needs support in these difficult times is entitled to that support from a country like ours, where we should look out for each other. And that's a very fundamentally different view between our side of politics and the Conservatives.
And just finally, Jenny Macklin, what are your plans for the future?
I'm going to go to the University of Melbourne and do some writing about policy. You're probably not surprised about that, Michelle. And do some teaching and think more about these big questions about inequality. I do think that we are at a very serious point in our history, both in Australia and in other similar developed countries, where increasing inequality is threatening our democracy, and that is not something I want to see. That's why I feel so strongly about addressing inequality in every one of its forms, that where we find serious disadvantage, but also by addressing the horror of extreme wealth at the top, where people are able to take advantage of tax breaks. And that just makes people feel as if the system is organised against them, and then they lose faith in the democracy that we should feel is something we all have to work incredibly hard to protect and nurture. So they're the issues that I feel strongly about, and I hope I can contribute to think about and come up with whatever new policy ideas we might be able to put in place.
Well, we might well be reading some of your work on The Conversation in coming years. Jenny Macklin, thank you very much for talking with us. All the best of luck for your new life.
And, thank you, Michelle.
And that's all for our Conversation Politics podcast for today. Thank you to my producer, Eliza Burlage. We'll be back with some budget podcasts next week. Goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevier. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.